coming up on today's Compassion Radio.
You have to remember that Conscious International works in countries where being a Christian sometimes can be even dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to be careful about how you handle that information. True Christian can be defined by their actions. Actions describes the way we are a lot better than words sometimes.
Actions indeed speak louder than words. And that's saying something in a time when everyone seems to be shouting themselves hoarse. Maybe we could better say we have an easier time listening to actions than angry rhetoric. You know, I think that's got some potential. Hi, and welcome to Compassion Radio, where we take you to the front lines of faith. It may seem like the world's on fire right now when you take a look at your social media and news feeds. But just over the horizon, there are even bigger challenges, if you can imagine it. Our good friends at Conscious International know that firsthand. They have some incredible stories to tell about how hungry the world really is for real hope, and how hungry their bodies are at the same time. It's an uncomfortable truth in uncomfortable times, but there are places, in our own time zones, where people are starving in the streets, and most foreign aid is being forcefully rejected. Just try to wrap your head around that. That's where intrepid, brave, and God-fearing specialists like Conscious International come in. Today we get to meet one of their key operatives in Latin America. I hope the next half hour opens your eyes, and more than that, your hearts. Thanks for joining us today. With me today on Compassion Radio is a first-time guest, but Conscious International is the company he works for. I want to welcome one of Jim Jennings' key people for Latin America now. Jürgen Kienle, we're going to refer to you as Dr. Kenny. Welcome to Compassion Radio.
Thank you so much, Bram. I feel very blessed for having this opportunity, and I hope that I can help you.
We do want to know what God's doing in Latin America, of course. We don't have much news coming from other parts of the world right now because travel is limited. Most of the news we're getting in the States is focused on how the COVID-19 epidemic is affecting people here in the States. All of our international news is about us now. So we don't hear much of the frontline news. That's why we have you on the program today. You got stuck here too. You were doing some fundraising for your projects, which is all through Latin America, South and Central. Dr. Kenny, tell me first of all, what were you working on when you got stuck here in the United States?
Well, before I got stuck, we were conducting programs in Guatemala, Nicaragua, Haiti, and Venezuela. Mm. Maybe the most important ones were the ones that we were doing in Venezuela, which is pretty much like we were working with refugees. We were trying to get them more food, hygiene kits, medical supplies. We were doing a shelter ministry in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. We were helping people with I don't know if you hear it, but on 2018, there was an eruption over there.
Yes.
And a lot of people lost their homes. So we were trying to give them back a new hope, a new chance, building some new homes in a safe location. We were also trying to work with people in Haiti, also in a shelter ministry. We're working with people in Nicaragua, and that's what I was doing.
The countries you mentioned are all countries that have been problematic, shall we say, for foreign policy here in the United States. We've had a very strong government policy against immigration coming from those countries, and we've tried to stop the influx. Of course, the epidemic now has pretty much shut down everybody's movement worldwide. So that's not much of an issue anymore. But there still is a mentality here in America that if any money goes towards projects that will benefit people from certain Central American countries, we don't want to be involved in that because they must be trying to take advantage of us. The people that you're working with, Dr. Kenny, why do you do it? And why do you think it's important for Christians to stay aware of what's happening in these countries and not be taken advantage of, but to do the things that God calls us to do?
Thank you so much for the question. I think that was a very important question because most of the time when I'm doing fundraising here, that's one of the first questions people ask. For example, they ask me why we should help, how we know that the money is actually going to go where we want it, and how we know that people are not going to take advantage of the resources that we're providing. And that is a very legit and honest question that people can ask. I will go to the Bible to respond this. Sometimes I feel like we try to make them a little bit more complicated.
Yeah,
for example,
we do.
The most when Jesus was asked about, like, hey, what are the most important commands? love the Lord with all your heart, with all your strength, with all your soul, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Sometimes we remember that part very well, like to love ourselves.
love ourselves part, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. People who heard in the news about COVID-19 went to the supermarkets to get food, to get toilet paper, to get everything they need. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong about that. They were being cautioned. But at the same time, you have to remember that the Lord asked us to love the neighbors as we love ourselves. So there are some people over there that might not have any other chances to be helped if there was not somebody somewhere that will provide that for them.
Okay, Dr. Kenny, since we know that there's a suspicion of abuse of the kind of relief monies that are being spent around the world, and we don't seem to think that the money we spend through government is well used either, there's just a lot of fear here in America. It's one of the reasons that we've worked with Conscience International over the years, because the projects that we have chosen to get involved in with you have been very targeted and specific, and they work through in-country partners, and you as a Latin American director speak the language, you're from these regions, but you're also well-versed in ethics and economics and the things that are required to make a program work, and of course, medical procedures and technologies. You have to be aware of all these different things. You mentioned four countries, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Haiti, and Venezuela. Let's just look at Venezuela for a second. If we are suspicious of the way people might use their resources, and we compare that to how we as Americans have been in a hoarding mentality, just get me what I need to get through this crisis. It'll be shorter if I'm not worried about what I need for the next day. In the case of Venezuela, you mentioned to me in our pre-recording conversation that it is still illegal to help people directly in that country. It would have to go through the government. Of course, it's a kleptocracy. The government just steals whatever it gets. It comes in, it feeds its army first, keeps itself in power. The people on the streets are not getting anything. And so they are literally at the point of starving. If they got anything from us, and it got to them somehow through a system that was gray market around the government, it would be considered an illegal thing by that government, but as far as Christians are concerned, it would be considered a moral thing to do. To do the right thing for a neighbor in Venezuela means, in this case, literally going against their own laws in order to save lives. I know you can't disclose methods and means by which you do the work you do, but Kenny, let me ask you, what can you do in Venezuela, and why is it important that Christians find a way to do it?
Okay, thank you so much for the question again. There's many things that we can do in Venezuela. Most of the times, it depends on the resources we have to work. I know that this is a very sensitive subject sometimes, but let me tell you something about the way we work. So maybe it will help you to understand how people can trust about their system we are using. For example, in Venezuela, I traveled in December to conduct an assessment just to see how the problem looked like. What were the needs over there? I went to check the refugee camps.
When we hear about the economic crisis in Venezuela, we're not hearing about refugee camps. So bring us up to date on this.
As you might hear, money in Venezuela doesn't worth anything. Mm-hmm. Like you can have millions of bolivars and it doesn't mean anything.
And the bolivar is their currency.
Yeah. So even if you have money there, there's not a lot of things that you will be able to purchase. Mm-hmm. A lot of people is trying to get out of their country. Hmm. Since they don't have like a car or something where they can do it, they walk to the border, they cross the border, and they keep walking.
Yeah.
The thing is that there is thousands of people doing that every day. So there is not enough room for all those people to go. And since they don't have money, they cannot stay in an hotel or do something like that.
Nor could they end up spending the money on the black market to get the coyotes that would normally be functioning with the organized crime across Central America to get refugees to America. They can't even do that.
That is a very good point. Different from in Central America, where people like pay for a coyote that will take you to Mexico and finally into the United States of America. In Venezuela, they cannot do that. It's too far away and they just don't have the resources or the money to pay for that.
Yeah.
The only option they have is to try to walk between Colombia and Venezuela. You'll find that there is a lot of people that are just doing whatever they can to survive. And you might see that there are some refugee camps, but it's not a typical refugee camp. If you ever had the opportunity to be one of those, it doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
Picture people in the street sleeping on the floor. That's a refugee camp. They can provide a lot of food, but they cannot provide enough beds. So they decided to just provide food.
We'll be back with Dr. Kenny, a trained doctor and surgeon serving the Lord in powerful ways with Conscience International, in just a moment. Friends, I don't really need to remind you of this, but we're living in momentous times. The kind of big history-making events that we'll be telling our grandkids about. What I probably should remind you of, however, is that times like these have a very special place in the heart of God. He knows how the suffering and hate increases in times like these. That's why he built the church. We need to really take to heart this truth. When the rest of the world hits rock bottom, God opens his storehouses to the faithful so that they can heal, comfort, clothe, and feed the needy. Since the time of the resurrection, the church was there every time an empire collapsed, a war was waged, a persecution was faced, a pandemic was endured. And every single time, the body of Christ grew. In fact, it thrived. Why? Because they remembered to invest God's capital in the things that really mattered for eternity. They didn't run away and hide. Compassion Radio wants to be your partner in this. Will you help us? We'll keep partnering with incredible kingdom servants like Conscience International if you'll make it possible for us to continue. Your prayerful giving makes that possible. Won't you join us? Just call, write, or visit our website today. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our website is, simply enough, CompassionRadio.com. Both ways will allow you to jump in right away. You can even text the word compassion to 53445 right now to get a jump link to our projects and giving page right from your phone. And lastly, we always appreciate your gifts, questions, and prayer requests by mail. That address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. We've always been a listener-supported and kingdom-giving ministry, so if you appreciate what you hear each day, please stand with us. God bless you. Now back to our guest, Dr. Kenny.
Before we go to the next problem, let me just kind of get some definitions down. When you talk about refugee camps, you're talking about places where people are camping out. It's not an organized international effort. And it still seems like the UN itself is avoiding getting directly involved with providing relief at the border, and certainly not internally inside Venezuela. These people are just kind of grouping around the few crossing points, and many rivers and things block the way. There are few bridges, and they're mostly armed, and their people are being forced back into their country. They become internally displaced, but they're still refugees. But those who make it across the border and can sneak across or pay a small bribe to get let go, to go quote-unquote shopping across the bridge, manage to make it into Colombia, and they're stuck. They just kind of stop. So all of the refugee work that I'm hearing about is fairly ad hoc, and it's not organized by any international agencies that I know of. You can correct me on this. When they collect across the border in these unorganized groupings of people, they may or may not be with family, but basically it's like Skid Row, people just being dumped in alleyways in very poor neighborhoods to start with, at border towns that are already dirty. This sounds like a recipe for economic and medical disaster.
There are some organizations working in the border. You will see refugee camps or tents. The main problem they have is that people, since they only stayed there for a day, they were stealing whatever they could get every time they went to the refugee camps. Hmm. So a lot of organizations just decided to stop having refugee camps, and it's more like they are camping around the area, since they are going to keep moving. Right now, they are focusing more on feeding programs, on feed as much as they can.
Yeah.
But you mentioned something that is very important. A lot of the organizations that were working there, including the government, seems that they are not too concerned about it. Like they, for some reason, maybe it could be the political background from Venezuela. Mm. They have tried to help them. And since they are denying that they want to be helped, people, I feel like it's kind of getting tired of trying to help. That's my perspective from what I saw.
Well, it's easy for governments to hide behind an excuse of, well, the government's not asking for any help. Why should we get involved?
Yeah.
Much less do they want to see resumption of hostilities, because there hasn't been, as I understand it, in hundreds of years, really any cross-border organized conflicts between nation states. It has mostly been guerrilla groups that have been hard to quash, and they'll jump across the border and hide out in each other's jungles for a while. Their perception of what threats are there are not necessarily about invasions. They're more about losing social cohesion. And if they let this disease of instability cross the border into our nation, they could poison our people, because it's usually about a political ideology that drives them to start with. And most of the governments that surround Venezuela are not particularly fond of a very Marxist government system. They're quite the opposite. They're more dictatorships in a very conservative sense. Nicaragua, of course, being an exception in Central America. But there's no empathy, as far as I see it, between the governments and the nation states that have an organization to want to intervene or interfere with. I think they're kind of waiting for it all to collapse and make America come in and wipe it all up. That's my impression. We're still left in the lurch. An organization like Conscience International is not big, but it does very targeted work. So what do you want to do, Dr. Kenny, and how will you get it done?
Yeah, thank you for that. You described it very well, what is happening. For the government in Venezuela, it seems like their people is just a resource they have, and it's a resource that they can spend if they need to spend. Mm-hmm. They don't want that other people will know that they are having problems. Mm-hmm. They want to sell the idea that everything is great over there.
Yeah.
And it might be happening the same in Nicaragua and other places where they have that kind of political background. Conscience International, we would love to go and have our own camp or mm-hmm. to have our own like system, but we have to target a little bit more of resources. What we're doing is that we are helping people inside of Venezuela, which is actually a challenge.
Yes.
Because it doesn't have a lot of access to the supplies they need. And we don't want that they will be traveling to the border, because that will give problems in the border. Violence will increase. People who live in the border will start having like problems with their business. And at the end, and we have seen this in Central America too, having a lot of people moving is not a solution for anything.
Right.
They will carry diseases. They will carry problems. The violence can increase.
Yeah.
So at the end, what we're trying to do is to buy some time for the people so they can stay in their homes, just waiting for things to get a little more stable for them.
Yeah.
So the way that we're working is that we're trying to provide them food and resources so they can stay at their homes.
What could a family in Venezuela get by with? If you were able to get aid into villages and you find people of peace in those cities that are able to be honest and ethical in the way they distribute the aid, they're actually trying to help their people and not exploit them. What could they get by with? How much would they need to survive? I don't just mean the amount of dollars it costs to buy things, but the actual material that you have to acquire for them, a family of, say, four people, what would you normally try to provide them so they can survive another month or two?
That is the key question. As you might imagine, some people might live with only $20 a month. That would be enough for them to get basic food. It's crazy because in America, it will be very hard. Like here, it will be very hard to live with that amount of money for food. But people there with basic food, they might be able to survive. We have other people that have cancer, Alzheimer's, or other diseases that need a specific medicine. And for them, they might need like $75 a month, which is not that much. So we're trying to target the people that need it the most. And with $20 a month, you can help a family. We have heard about stories about like 12-year boys that goes to work since 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. to provide some food for the homes. So 12-year-old kid can do it for their family. I feel like we can help some, you know.
So if you can employ people or make use of their time, the capital you have is in people and in hours.
Yeah, and maybe another thing that is very important that I haven't get a chance to talk to you. A very important thing that you have to remember is that we already have partners inside of Venezuela.
Okay.
And they are partners that we trust. It's people that have been working with us, some of them for years. They are the ones who are helping us inside of the border. This also answers the question about like how we work and why people should trust us. We have people inside. Their main purpose is to help those in need.
Yeah.
And they are helping them because most of the time it's a story that they already know. In their community, there is this guy who is struggling and they need food. And we can provide that food for that guy.
Yeah. Now, in the case of people who support international aid like this, from a Christian perspective and from a Christian worldview, we're always looking for honesty and ethical behavior there, but we also have this kind of expectation that most of it's going to be flowing through channels that would be other Christians. Of the people that you work with, how do you vet them? Is it important that they have some kind of faith background and belief and therefore are part of an organized church? Or is there some other criteria that Conscience International goes to when it comes to emergency relief situations like this?
So Conscious International works with people that on their background, they have to be Christians or at least have to be on the same direction as a Christian. Some people might not be considered themselves as Christian, but their values reflect.
Yeah.
We work with professionals. Yeah. Like we try to provide a professional service. So it's not that we are improvising. It's not that we are trying to see what came out with the money. We already have plans and we have a work plan that we try to follow.
Okay.
And we're trying to reach people that has active conscience is what I like to call it.
Active conscience, yeah.
We try to reach professionals and people who is involved with other organizations inside of the country where we're working, people that are already serving in churches. Mm-hmm. So they gave us that background. And so that help us to know a little bit and have some feedback about the people who is working for us.
When we traveled in Africa together, Jim Jennings and I got to spend time with folks that are in the Bidi Bidi camps and near the South Sudan border. And the question of whether or not something was Christian or not was a little fuzzier because there's cultural Christianity in many countries. The people that seemed to be the most ethical had a Christian background, but they were also polygamous. Their tribal background allowed them a certain number of wives, therefore they could start their own little micro village within the camps. And they were well organized. The kids were better fed than some others had been. In helping them, they were trying to figure out a way, how do you get the core values of the gospel through people that don't seem to live like you so that it would help those who don't believe like you? That more people, more children could be saved. And of course, the gospel was spreading that way organically. But I even noticed it was kind of odd because one of the first things a lot of the refugees did when they got to these camps was go build a building that no one lived in. They put all their effort into building this big rectangle building, and they would live in little round huts with a tent thing thrown over it. I asked them a couple of times, what's the big building for? I said, well, that's our church. What do you need a church for? Do you have a pastor here? Or do you go there on Sundays to worship? Oh, no, no. We will do that when the leader comes. They were expecting somebody to come rescue them out of their unknowingness when it comes to worship. If you didn't have a pastor and have somebody professional come in to do that job, then that thing couldn't happen until that time. So they spent all this effort and energy, what little resources they had, making mud bricks and building this building. It could have housed 100 people and doing nothing with it because the professional was not there yet. They had never been empowered to say, this is my family. This is my body. This is my place in the kingdom. I wept over that. The work of caring for children that were starving was, of course, the first work to do. But the notion of spiritual accountability and authority and agency to say, this is who we are, this is who God is to us, was just missing, but the form was there. So I say that by way of asking you this question. Mm-hmm. When you get in these countries where you're looking for people that have some kind of background, that share your same kind of ethic, your same values, and you ask them to partner with you, and you're putting sometimes money in their hands, which is in hard currency, which is not the bolivar, for example, in Venezuela. But you're getting them resources they need to be able to get the resources they can get within their country. And they do that. They are faithful to you. They find ways to get the resources needed to their people, and they make good on that. How do you present values that will then multiply, and the values that you hold dear of accountability and honesty and integrity? How do you propagate those values so that others will catch that vision along the way and become more and more effective at looking out for each other, of taking care of brothers and sisters, and of building the kingdom of God that way? I know it's a big question, but it's important to me.
It's a very important question. I like those kind of questions, to be honest. Hmm. You have to remember that Conscious International works in countries where being a Christian sometimes can be even dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to be careful about how you handle that information. But at the same time, I do believe that a true Christian can be defined by their actions. Like, mm-hmm. you don't need to be saying like, hey, I have a cross. You have to follow Jesus. Mm-hmm. If you show them by your actions to others, they will think, why is this guy different? Like, what makes him wanted to do this? Why he comes here to help us when he might not need to come to help us?
Yeah.
Actions describes the way we are a lot better than words sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
For example, right now, this is my second language, so I would rather to be speaking in Spanish where mm-hmm. I can be a little bit more fluent.
Right.
But on the field, where people can see my actions and the way I work, they see something that might be missing. And even for Christian people,
yeah.
Christian, and this is also a personal thought, sometimes people would say, yes, I'm going to help, I'm going to donate money, I'm going to go to church, yeah. when I will have enough money to donate. Like, I would do all of the things you're asking when I will have the resources to help. And most of the times, God is not asking you for your money. He's asking you for your heart. He's asking you for your willing to be able to do what you know is fair and what he's asking you to do. Because at the end, it's not even you the one who is shining. It's the Lord through your actions who is showing other people what you can do for them. Yeah.
Dr. Kenny will be back tomorrow with more of the amazing work of Conscious International around the world, and specifically in the areas closest to our home here in America. I hope you'll join us then. Remember, friends, Compassion Radio is always a coalition of the willing. Are you willing to help get out God's good news stories of the kingdom really living the gospel in the 21st century? Oh, I hope so. Just call or write us today to help keep us on the air and in the field. Call 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And jump in anytime at CompassionRadio.com. We're waiting for you, friends. Hop on board. We'll see you tomorrow.